We're going to begin here on Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph in Perek Lo Yachpar. And you recall that we spoke about Dam HaNimtza B'Prozdor, and we didn't know if the Dam came from the Cheder and therefore it's Tamei and she's Tmeya, or it came from the Aliyah and it's Dam Tor, she's Tahora. And we quoted a Braisa of Rabbi Chiya, according to which she's Tmeya, and not only Tmeya, because we don't know whether she's Tmeya or Tahora, B'Tahora Safek, but she's Tmeya Vada'it, it's a definite Tuma, such that Rabbi Chiya claims that if she would enter into the Beis HaMikdash, in that state, she would have to bring a Korban Chatos. If she touched, she came in contact with Truma, we would burn the Truma. That would only be in a case of Tuma Vadois. The Gemara wanted to prove from this din of Dam HaNimtza B'Prozdor that Rov beats out Karov, because even if the Dam was found closer to the Aliyah, nevertheless Rov Damim is Dam Tahar, Dam Tomei Min HaMokar, and therefore she's Tmeya. Rov beats out Karov. We had a long discussion last time about the nature of this Karov. It's Kurva de Muchach, because the Dam was found on the Gag of the Aliyah, etc., etc. And Rav, if you recall, rejected this proof because he said that in this case, everybody would agree that Rov beats out Karov, because Rov is supported by Matsui. So that's more or less where we left it off last time. So if you're looking on Daf Chaf Dalet to pick it up tonight, we're going to start from Omar Rava Shmamina Midrabchia Tlas, which is approximately 9 lines down from the top of the page. Does everybody have it? The first word in the line is Hatruma. Yeah, I didn't count. I'm saying, you have it? Okay, V'yomar Rava, Shma Mina Midrab Chia Tlas. We can derive from Rabbi Chia 3 halachic principles, 3 conclusions. And they're all based on the fact that Rabbi Chia established that she is Tmeya. Shma Mina, number 1, Rov V'Karov, Halach Achar HaRov. Most of her damim are coming from the cheder. The dam was found close to the aliyah. We assume, therefore, that the dam came from the cheder because Rov beats out Karov. And the Gemara is going to point out that this statement of Rava contradicts his original statement, to the tune of which this case is different. It's not Rov against Karov, it's Rov and Matsui against Karov. Apparently, Rava at this point drops the Matsui. And we would have to understand why he made an about-face in that sense. And if you recall, we discussed the Shev Shmaita to a great length. Let's go on and see the second Shma Mina. Shma Mina Ruba Doraisa. We have to talk about this. It sounds like Rava discovered America here. There was some special chidush in Ruba Doraisa, as if to say one could have thought that Rov is not Doraisa. We'll have to understand that. And finally, Shma Mina Isa Lidrabi Zera, that we accept Rabbi Zera. Okay, that's going to be a bit of a discussion. So let's hold off on this discussion about the third Shma Mina for just a few minutes. Let's go back to the middle Shma Mina. Shma Mina Ruba Doraisa. So let me refer you to a Tosfos that's easy to miss. Why is it easy to miss? Because it's sort of swallowed up in the Tosfos Ushma Mina, which is a little bit lower down on the daf. And towards the end of that Tosfos, I would say 2/3 of the way down, about 8 lines down, you'll see the word Haggah, Ushma Mina Ruba Doraisa. So it's not exactly clear what the Haggah, who wrote the Haggah, if it's part of Tosfos or it came later, But for our purposes, we're going to treat it as if it was a Tosus. We're more interested in the Svara and the logic of Tosus. Tosus says, Chashivle Ruba Delesa, come on. He considers this Rove, Rava considers this Rove as a Ruba Delesa, come on. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Diberuba Deisa, come on. Lotzarech Lemedak, Shmamino. We don't need Rava to discover, to derive the conclusion that Rove is Doraisa in a case of Ruba Deisa, come on. Why don't we need Rava for that? Dekruxiv, as we say in Yiddish, state and pasuk. What does it say? Achri Ravim Lahatos. And the Gemara, at the beginning of Chulin, interprets this pasuk as referring to a Ruba Deisa, come on. For example, the paradigm of Rove would be what? Does anybody remember this? We discussed this once in the past. Would be Rove Dayanim, correct. When you have a decision that comes in front of a Beit Din, and the judges stand up and they're counted for a vote, then majority rules. And there are all sorts of dinim about what kind of majority and what kind of Beit Din, fine. But that principle is derived from a pasuk achri rabim lahatos. So if it's derived from a scriptural verse, then obviously it's not derabbanan, but rather it's doraisa. Why do I need Rava to establish that Rove is doraisa? You know, Rava says I derived it logically from Rabbi Chia. I don't need to derive it logically from Rabbi Chia if it's a pasuk. The answer is, says Tosfos, that the pasuk teaches me Ruba de Isa, come on. Not Ruba de Lesa, come on. So let's just think and analyze these two concepts that seem very similar. Ruba de Isa, come on, and Ruba de Lesa, come on. Ruba de Isa, come on, means it's right there in front of my eyes. I can count it. It's tangible. It's concrete. There are 14 judges this way and 13 judges that way, whatever the numbers are. We have it right in front of us. Take, for example, the case that we discussed in the past. You have a piece of meat that's found in a city. You've got 9 kosher butcher shops and 1 non-kosher butcher shop. That, too, is a Ruba Deisa, come on. I can count the Rove. It's right there in front of me. However, there's a different category of Rove. I can't really count it. I know it's so. But my knowledge is based on what we call nature, on minhag olam. We know the way the world operates. So take, for example, if we say that most women give birth after 9 months. Well, we're not counting women and seeing, well, which women in the world gave birth after 9, which after 7. But it's based on teva olam. Or, for example, if we assume most people are healthy and they're not an islandist, so he's not a tsarist, they can bear children. That's an assumption that's based on teva ha'olam, the way the world operates, the way God created the universe. It's not based on Ruba Deisa, come on, we can count it. The Gemara in Chulin is very hard-pressed to find a source in the Torah for Ruba Deisa, come on. Ruba Deisa, come on, is a sin. Shachri Rabim Lahatos. Where's the source for Ruba Deisa, come on, that we rely on this abstract, let's call it statistical majority rules, that in most cases it's got to be so-and-so because that's the nature. So the Gemara, as a matter of fact, in Chulin doesn't come to any clear answer to this question. Rashi offers two possibilities, that maybe Ruba de Lesa, come on, is halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, which is not exactly a doraisa, it's not a derabbanan, it's somewhere in between. Or alternatively, Rashi says that somehow we derive it from Ruba Deisa, come on. If the Torah is willing to rely on Rove in the case of majority rules, then if there's a majority based on the way the world operates, that also gives me license to fall back in any suffix, in any doubt, on the Rove, on the majority situation. But be that as it may, since the Gemara doesn't come to any conclusion about where there's a definite source in the Torah for the concept of Ruba Deisa, come on. Therefore, it's sort of like an open-ended question. And we need proof to establish that even a Ruba the lesser come on is Doraisa. That's what Rav is going to derive, says Tosfos, from the statement of Rabbi Chiya. The Braisa Rabbi Chiya that relies on a Rav, what kind of a Rav? We say that most of the dam that a woman has is coming min acheder. Why? Because that's part of the natural cycle, the way the biological system operates. She could theoretically have dam min aliyah, but that would have to be some sort of a fluke, some sort of an accident. So we rely on Rov, but can we count the Rov? Can we say every single woman belongs to that Rov? Maybe there are certain women have dam min aliyah, you know, in great frequency or in great volume, but we know that it's a Rov because of the Teva Ha'olam. If it's a Rov based on Teva Ha'olam, it's a Ruba the Lesser, come on. Here's where Rav wants to prove that even a Ruba the Lesser, come on, is Doraisa. And where does he see it? In the Braisa of Rav Chiya? Maybe it's only Drabanan? Maybe it's only Safek? We don't know if she's Tamei or not Tamei, so we'll be Metameha. Oh, no. It couldn't be. There's no way, no how, that Tumah could be a Drabanan Dika Tumah. Because what did Rav Chiya say? That she brings a carbon if she goes into the Beis HaMikdash, that we can burn Truma if she has contact with Tumah, with Truma. That could only be in a Tumah Doraisa. That could not be applicable to a Tumah Drabanan. You can't take Truma Doraisa and violate the Iser of Chilul Truma and strengthen Truma Tahora based on some sort of Tumah that's only Drabanan. So just to review the trend of thought here of Rav Chiya, Rav Chiya understood that a Ruba the Lesser come on is Doraisa. We burn the Truma, we machayev har kom chatos, we chances the Migdash. He relies on Rov. And mind you, this Rov is a little bit iffy. First, because it's a Ruba the Lesser come on. And as we said, the Gemara in Chulin doesn't come to any definite conclusion about from whence we derive a Ruba the Lesser come on. But it's also iffy for another reason, because where did we find this Dam? In the Gag of the Aliyah. We didn't find it close to the Cheder. And what's that called? Karav. It's a Kurva de Mucha. So the Rov is not standing on its own, uncontradicted as it were. There's a collision against the Rov because of the Karav. And yet, despite it all, Rav Chiya pronounces her as a Vadai Tmeya Da'oraisa. You see the power of Rov? Even though it's a Ruba the Lesser, come on. Even though there's no clear-cut scriptural source for this Rov, nevertheless it's Doraisa. It beats out a Karov, and not just Stama Karov, but a Kurva the Muchach. And it creates a Psak Vadai. In this case, she's Vadai Tmeya. However, I just want to share with you an alternative approach to this Sugya. We took Tosus's approach to the name of the Haggah, but the Rimi Gash, one of the early popular Rishonim, and he has a great deal to say on many sugyas and shas, but certainly on this one, he claims that really what Rava wants to indicate is that Rov beats out Karov, and that itself is a Din Doraisa. Meaning, he picks up the following. Here you have a Rov against Karov. On the one hand, Rov Damim, Min Acheder. On the other hand, she found the Dam Karov, Le Aliyah. We have a collision here between the two. Maybe perhaps the halacha of Rov beating out Karov is itself only a Darabanan. How do we know that Rov beats out Karov to establish a Din Doraisa? Therefore, Rava wants to point out that since Rabbi Chiya has this halacha, Sorfan Alvas Atruma, etc., etc., it must be that Rov beats out Karov even Doraisa. What would be if a Rov would be up against the Karov, if there was no Karov against the Rov, then I don't need Rava. Because then, everyone knows, Achrei Rabim Lahatos, that we rely on Rov. And likely, that the Rimi Gash holds, that even a Ruba the Lesser come on, is derived from a Ruva Disa Kamon. Even though the Gemara, as I said, doesn't come to any definite conclusion, but that was one of the possibilities, and that's the way the Rimigash goes. There's a third approach to the sugya in a sefer called Haga'os Paras Yosef. And he says that Rava wants to tell us a chiddush that we go after Rov even against the chazaka. What does it mean? Before the woman sees dam, what's her status? She's a tahora. I mean, last time, let's say she became a tvan and she was matara, so she went to mikvah and so forth and so on. Now she has what's called a cheskas tahara, which means she has rights to remain in a state of tahara. We assume she's tahora until we know otherwise. So you need a powerful piece of evidence or some sort of very powerful agency to undermine the chazaka. The chiddush of Rava, which he found in Rabbi Chia, is that Rov beats out a chazaka to such an extent that now Sarfanov is a truma. It means the Rov creates a vadai tmea, and this is on a deraisa level so we can burn truma. And all this beats out a chazaka. So it's Rov against the cheskas tahara. In fact, if you combine all the Rishonim, all the Mefarshim together into one cholent, what comes out is that even though the Rov is against a Karov, and number two, it's against the Karov d'Oraisa, and number three, even though the Rov is a Ruben the Lesser, come on, and even though the Rov is against the Chazaka, this Rov has Alamilus, and nevertheless, we establish her status as that of a Tmeya d'Oraisa v'Adois, because that's the power of Rov. And Rabosai, I'm tempted to think, you know, there's an old issue about how Rove operates, whether Rove is just statistical probability, what we call a birur, it's some sort of an evidence that indicates what happened and inclines the suffix one way or the other. Or Rove is some sort of separate din. You know, the Torah gave inherent power to Rove. You rely on Rove, you don't think about it, you don't question it. It's a din. It's not a birur, it's a din. The impression I get when Rava says Ruba d'Oraisa, Mami no Ruba d'Oraisa, against all the weight of the evidence against the Rove. You know, there's a seesaw here. On one side of the seesaw you have the weight of the Rove. And against the Rove you have all these counter forces of Chazaka, of Kurva de Muchach. It's also a very, you know, abstract Rove, it's not tangible, it's not concrete, it's not countable, it's not easel, come on. But there's a separate din of Rove. And that Rove has the power that the Torah invested in it to override any other considerations. The Pella, the amazing thing about this, is we're talking about a Ruba de Lesser, come on. You know, if you were to tell me that Ruba de Issa, come on, is a din, I would wince a little bit, but I would swallow the pill. But now we're talking about a Ruben the Lesser come on. A Ruben the Lesser come on is logical, it's statistical, it's based on the way nature operates. I would have said that's clearly a birur. And not only that, we didn't find any clear source in the Torah that would upgrade the power of Rov from a statistical probability theory, which I call a birur, to the status of a din. That's a real pella of a chidush. But I have to tell you that my intuition, the impression I get when I walk away from this sugya, is that indeed we are talking about Rove under a new category in which the Torah invests in Rove a power and a special status. We call it a din. Good. Now let's get back to the third Shmamina. Shmamina Isa l'Rabbi Zeira. We derive from Rabbi Chia, says Rava, that we accept Rabbi Zeira, afal pi shedalsos hamedina neulos. This statement of Rabbi Zeira is found in the Gemara in Ksubas Daf Tesvav. The case is where a woman, a Jewish woman, Evach, was raped, and the question is who the rapist is, and can she marry a Kohen? If the deed was done, the terrible deed by a guy, then she becomes psula, she becomes disqualified to kahuna. If it was done by a Jew, Again, we don't applaud what he did, but at least her status still remains tahora l'kohen. So the Mishnah establishes rov. If rov of the members of the city, the residents of the city, are masiyin l'kohuna, that means the Jewish are not goyim, then she can marry kohen. We rely on rov. And the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yoshua, that halacha of the Mishnah only applies if the gates of the city are open, and there's a seah, meaning some sort of a traveling group of Jews and goyim, but mostly Jews, that come in from the outside, that passes by, that travels. The Gemara explains that according to Rabbi Yeshua, we need two roves. We need one rove to construct a rove based on the residents of the city, and we need a second rove, which is constructed based on the people from outside the city who are coming into the city. And we know at that particular time, when the Maisa happened, there was a Seah, there was a group of people coming from the outside, and they too had a row of Cherim. So we put together the row from the inside and the row from the outside, and we have Cherim. So Rabbi Zera says that you should not view Rabbi Yoshua's statement as a universal halacha. After all, the Torah says rely on row, you only need one row. Rabbi Yeshua is an exception to the rule, very limited, rather than the rule itself. For example, in the case of 9 kosher butcher shops versus 1 treif, the meat is kosher based on one rove. Says Rabbi Zera, we don't need to open the gates of the city and limit ourselves to that scenario in which there's a seah, there's a group of people who are coming from the outside, and they are ksherim, they are Jews that are carrying with them kosher meat, or there's an influx of butchers from the outside, and most of them are carrying kosher meat. We don't need a second rove. One rove is sufficient. When did Rabbi Yeshua make his statement that you need trei ruvi, that the city's gates are open? That's only in Yuchsin. And that principle is called Maila Asu B'Yuchsin. Much of the second parak of Ksuvis is dedicated to that principle, that rule called Maila Asu B'Yuchsin, which means that if we want to marry off a girl to a Kohen, they made a Maila, the Rabbanon, upgraded the status of a Kohen to such an extent that even though in other areas of Halacha we could rely and fall back on lesser proofs, evidence that's not 100%, but with regard to Kahuna, we raise the ante, we have to have an upgraded level of proof because the Maila Asu B'Yuchsin, when it comes to Kohanim, they were very careful. So therefore, Rav Zera's statement is that don't misunderstand and think that Rov only works if you have a second Rov. One Rov from the inside, one from the outside. No. Rav Zera says one Rov as a universal rule is sufficient. Says Rava, back to our sugya, from the fact that Rabbi Chia relied on Rov, in this case of Dama Nimtza B'Prozdar, it means that one rove is sufficient. There's no second rove here. There's no dalsos, hamedina, psuchos, or neulos. There's nobody coming from the outside. All the dam is internal dam. The rove can only be constructed from the dam within our system. There's only one rove. As you see, that Reb Zeir is correct. That all you need is one rove. If you would need two, it wouldn't make any sense to apply that principle here in the case of Dama Nimsa B'Prozdo, because here there's only one rove max and there's no possibility of a second rove. The logic before Rabbi Zera, what I call the Hava Mina, and against that Hava Mina, we see Rava here is battling very hard. The Hava Mina that one rove is not reliable, we need two, is a very strange Hava Mina. Because, again, the statistical probability has not changed one iota. In other words, the local residents, let's call it 70% Jewish. The people coming in from the outside are 70% Jewish. But in both cases, you have the miut of 30% non-Jewish. It's a game over here that we're playing. By introducing a second rove, we in no way have convinced ourselves that there's more likelihood that the ma'anes, that the person who's responsible for this deed, was a Jew. You end up with the same identical ratio of 7-3. So once again, I swing back to my original premise that I discussed with you just 5 minutes ago, that rov is something that the Torah recognizes. The Torah gave the power to rov to operate in Hilchos Sfeikos and determine which way we should go in doubt. It's a din rov. If it was a birur, if it was a statistical likelihood, then the concept of Trey Ruby is absolutely ludicrous on a Doraisa level. Now again, keep in mind that you can understand Trey Ruby as a rabbinic requirement, but it's very hard to push that into our sugya because we're dealing with a din Doraisa. So Rava is trying to derive from Izera, prove that you only need one Rav, and we're dealing with a Doraisa. What would have been the Havamina that you need Trey Ruby on a Doraisa level? It would seem to be a mistake to even entertain such a possibility. On a Darabana level, I could say, look, let's not rely on one rov. We need two rovs. For example, in the case of a woman who is Nensa, I'd rather not rely on rov because that rov assumes that he came to her and he was Ma'anis, or if she came to him, you know, Avon calling and then he raped her, Chas v'Shalom, that would be what we call kol kavua kemech tzal mechzada, because we don't know which house she went into, a Jewish house or a non-Jewish house. So you could say that rather rely on one rov, where the possibility exists that Nebuchad might be a kol kavua situation, and the rov is completely null and void, let's introduce another rov, and that is the rov from the outside. There's no possibility of kavua, because these people are travelers that passes by, they're not here in a makom kavua, so there's no latest asafik makom kavua. That would work on a Durabana level, but on a Duraisa level, to say that you need two roves, again, if rove is some sort of exeris hakosuv, it's some sort of new din that we really don't understand, then you could say, perhaps, that the Torah requires two roves, because that's the first impression you get from Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah Ksuvos. In any event, the bottom line is that we derive from this entire discussion three conclusions. Rava derives three conclusions. Number one, that Rov beats out Karov. Number two, that Rov is Doraisa. Number three, that one Rov is sufficient. Okay, we're going to skip down to the word Itmar. Itmar. Chavis Shetzafa Binahar. Here's another case of Rov and Karov. We find a barrel of wine outside the city. The city is located on the shores of a river. We'll see later on that it's the Nile River. The Euphrates River, which is called Nahar Pras. In any event, the question here is, where did this barrel of wine come from? And this issue hinges upon a cluster of cities, all of which border on this river. They go from north to south. Where did you find the barrel? Now, the city right next to the barrel, which is called Karo because of its proximate location, is Rov Yisrael. It's a Jewish city. But most of the cities up and down this river are non-Jewish cities. So if we use Rov, then we would have to assume that this wine is not kosher wine, and we would prohibit it. If on the other hand we would use Karov, then since the city right next door to where we found the barrel is Ir Sheruba Yisrael, then Karov beats out Rov, and therefore you're allowed to drink the wine because this city is Ruba Yisrael. Well, you'll see, Joel, you'll see as we go through the sugya that the cities up on top are upstream, meaning the barrel could have very likely have come from one of the upper cities, because gravity, you know, the current is pulling barrels or anything in the river downwards. But let's wait another minute until we see that clearly in the Gemara. So in any event, here's the case. You found the chavis, you found the barrel of wine. Now, you have to determine whether it came from the Jewish city or the non-Jewish city. So Omar Rav, on this we have Machlok between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says, Nimtzeis keneged ir sherubi Yisrael muteres. And Rav would seem, at first glance, to be accepting the view that in a collision between Rov and Karov, which wins out?
The only one he seems to be talking about at this stage is Karov.
Correct. Rav seems to be relying on Karov. You're absolutely correct. And it means that according to Rav, you could be matir the wine because you found it outside of a city that's Rubi Yisrael. However, if you found it keneged ir sheruba nachrim, then asura, that you can't drink the barrel of wine because then you assume it came from this closest city, which means that it's not kosher. Shmuel amar afilu nimtzeis keneged ir sheruba Yisrael asura. Shmuel says karov is not powerful enough to rely on in order to allow you to drink the wine, because since the Rov, most of the cities upstream are non-Jewish cities, Amor, we should say perhaps, again there are Girsa problems here, but Mei Dekira Asoi. Rashi explains, what is Dekira? Dekira, Rashi says, Shem Machos. You'll see this on the fifth of the wide lines. Hu al nahar pras. He quotes the Gemara in Kiddushin. V'ein Yisrael mitzuyim shah. So Rashi points out that this Dekira is a cluster of cities, a machos. Most of the cities, or all of the cities with the exception of one, are non-Jewish. The Jews don't hang out there. It's exclusive. You know, they exclude Jews from there, or whatever it might be. And therefore, says Shmuel, since it's logically possible that this barrel came down the river from one of the upper cities and landed right here near the city of Yisrael, we have Rov against Karov. And Rov beats out Karov. So therefore the Gemara concludes at this point, Lema b'Rav Chanina kamiflagi. The machlokas here between Rav and Shmuel revolves around Rav Chanina. And Demar, meaning Shmuel in this case, Islay de Rabbi Chanina. Now this Rov beats out Karov, and therefore since according to Shmuel, in this case of Dekira, most of the cities are non-Jewish, we have to tilt the scale in favor of assuming that the wine is not Jewish wine, it's Asura. So Rov beats out Karov, even though you found the barrel of wine right next door, in proximity to a Jewish city, the wine is prohibited. Umar, but Rav, less lay the Rabbi Chanina. But rather he prefers Karov over Rov. And since Karov beats out Rov, therefore, the wine is permissible. Now, I'm not sure if at this point in the Gemara there are any, shall we say, long-term repercussions, meaning in a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, I'm not 100% sure if this is correct, but we would probably paskin like Rav in any event, so maybe that would have repercussions in terms of the statement of Rabbi Chanina. I don't know. I just want to point out here that Tosfos raises a kasha back on Daf Chav Gimel Amid Beis in this long Tosfos Rov, and there's a strange situation here. The Gemara says that Rav holds that Karov beats out Rov. That's what the Gemara says. That's the mar less leid Rabbi Chiya, because Rav, by permitting the wine, is allowing Karov to beat out Rov. The only question is, when Rav originally formulated his halacha, he didn't say anything about which house bordered on the river. What I mean to say is the following. You've got a city, in this case it's a Jewish city, that comes up onto the river. And you find the barrel in the river. But what was the house that was closest to the river? And Tosis raises the possibility that it might be one of the non-Jewish homes. Which means to say that Rav himself is operating with a rov against the karov. Why? Because Rav is assuming that the barrel of wine came from the closest city. Fine. But I grant you that it came from the closest city. But within that city, you've got Jews that sell wine or own wine, and you have goyim. So how do you know whether it's from the non-Jew or from the Jew? The answer is that here you have a situation again of rov against karov. Most of the people, the residents in the city, are Jews. But the barrel of wine, presumably, that's Tosfos's logic, was found in close proximity to the house of a goy. How could Rav permit that wine if Rav holds that karov beats out rov? So there's a very strange situation over here, where on the one hand the Gemara waves the banner of karov here in explaining Rav, because Rav clearly assumes that the barrel did not come from one of the non-Jewish cities, but came from the close Jewish city. But on the other hand, even having granted you that premise that this wine came out of the close city, I still have a scenario of rov against karov. Because if presumably the last house on the row, right on the shore of the river, was a non-Jewish home, then karov would tell me that this barrel belongs to the non-Jew and therefore it's prohibited. So Tosus, in order to get out of this bind, he says the following: Hanidonim lelech achar rov achar karov hu rak ba'ofet shel kurva demuchach. Says Tosus that when we want to determine and suggest that rov could beat out karov, that's only in a case of kurva demuchach. Says Tosus, if you're dealing with the issue of which city it came from, that's called a kurva demuchach. If you're dealing with the situation with a question of which house it came from within the city, that's called kurva delo muchach. When we want to establish that according to Rav, karov beats out rov, the only way we can suggest such a thing is if it's a kurva demuchach. So if you're dealing with a number of cities that border on the river, and you find the barrel of wine next to the minority, meaning the Jewish city, the one single Jewish city, but it's Karov. Since you don't know which city it came from, you apply the logic of Kurva de Muchach, and that could beat out a Rov. But nobody ever entertained the possibility that Karov, if it's Edo Muchach, could defeat Rov. That was never an issue. And therefore, when you're determining which house the barrel came from within the city, that's called kurva delo muchach. There are all sorts of people going around the streets of the city. It's not that you found it in some sort of gated private property in front of the guy's house. You found it somewhere in the boardwalk on the road. It was left there or rolled away on its way down to the river. Maybe they were shipping it out for export purposes, but whatever it might be, when Tosfos' principle is that whenever you're dealing within the city, then the issue is kurva de'eno muchach. That's a kurva de'lav muchach. And that's why, by the way, in the case of Teisha Chanuyos, when you find a piece of meat, even if you find the piece of meat in front of that one single non-kosher butcher store, nobody would doubt that you're allowed to eat the meat because there are 9 kosher butcher stores in town. That's a kurva de lo muchach, and clearly Rov beats out a kurva de lo muchach. So again, in this case of Chavis, you've got an overlap of two situations. Meaning, there's one suffix as to which city it came from. There's another suffix which house it came from within the city. The first suffix, you posit a rove against a kurva, the muchach. And here Rav insists that we can assume it came from the Jewish city, because kurva the muchach beats out rove. On the other hand, when you're dealing with the second question, okay, I grant you that kurva the muchach tells me that the barrel came from within the city. But look, we found it in a Jewish city, but in front of a non-Jewish house, says Tosus, that's a kurva de lo muchach. And there, clearly, less mind the polik, nobody disagrees, we go baser rov. Do we have it? Any questions? Now the Gemara rejects it. Lo. The Gemara offers another interpretation of the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. And this touches on the question, Joel, that you were raising earlier. Is it a downstream motion? Meaning, is it really logical to assume that the barrels of wine could have come from one of the other cities? Says the Gemara, Kuli Alma, everybody agrees, Islahu the Rabbi Chanina. Clearly everyone agrees that Rov beats out Karov. And therefore, if Rov beats out Karov, then we understand Shmuel, that we have to prohibit the wine because it came from the Rov, and most of the cities bordering on this river are non-Jewish cities, and therefore we can determine that the wine is not kosher. So now we have to understand Rava Hacha Behacha Mifliki. What are they arguing about? Demar Sover, now the Gemara explains Rav. Rav says that despite the Rov, and despite the fact that as a general rule Rov beats out Karov, nevertheless in this case, the Rov is not powerful enough to beat out the Karov. This is a very unique case, says Rav. Why? If you're going to tell me that it came from one of the cities above, in this cluster of cities, it would never have made it all the way down here, to the bottom city. Why? There's a very, very slim chance, if at all, that the barrel of wine could have made it all the way down. In my mind, I'm thinking of. Did you ever see though? You've all been to Niagara Falls, right? More than once, probably, right? Did you ever read all those signs that sometimes they tell you on the Maid of the Mist? How many people, the daredevils that they jumped the barrel, they went down to Niagara Falls. Anyway, in this case, it's very unlikely that the barrel could have made it successfully down this trip. Why? Because there are ikule upshure. So Rashi explains what these ikule and pshure are. He says that up and down the river you find pockets of stones. And now what happens with the stones, says Rashi, is that when the water hits up against the stones and it circles around, it creates some sort of a marbolus, what we call a whirlpool. And anything in there gets stuck, it gets caught on its way down. Maybe that's where we should go fishing for a treasure, a lost treasure, what is it called, a pirate ship or something. Anyway, there's something also called pshure. Pshure are pockets of very, very cold water. Like, I guess you'd call it glaciers or some sort of that. And they clog up in certain areas. And Rashi says that when you're going down a long strip of a river, it's highly unlikely that this barrel could maneuver itself. It doesn't have a brain. It's not computer programmed or radar sensitive to swing around and avoid all the kule and all the pshure. At some point or other, it's definitely, very, very likely to get stuck. So that even though Rove is more powerful than Karov, and even than Kurva the Muchach, nevertheless, in this case, Rav claims that even Rav Chanina would completely null and void the Rove, because it's not logical to to think that this unusual occurrence could have happened and this barrel is the one in a million that could successfully make it down the Euphrates River. So what does Shmuel hold? Umar Sover Shmuel holds Harifa dinara nokat viasoi. Perhaps when the barrel fell into the river, right, usually you take the barrels over the docks and you put it straight on the ships and you send it for export, but here a barrel somehow rolled off the dock, rolled off the planks and fell into the river. Where did it fall, says Shmuel? It fell in a place where there's a very strong current of water. It's like what they call white water rafting. You know, it got caught in a zerem of mayim, and this zerem, this force, this wave was so powerful that it took the barrel on a straight trip, like an arrow, without going to the left or to the right, down the middle of the river. And somehow it made it through. Now, the obvious question here is, what is the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel? You know, Rav argues kind of logically that it's unusual, unlikely, despite the great number of cities up on top that are non-Jewish, that any barrel from any of those cities would have successfully made it down the river. And Shmuel says, but maybe it got caught, you know, it was projected, it was projected, it was pushed by this very strong current, which he calls Harifa Dinara. It seems kind of funny. Are they arguing about the probability or the likelihood of this Harifa Dinara against the Kuli of Pshure?
Propelled,
I said projected. It was propelled by Harifa Dinara. So once again, you know, I'm going to go back to my old fishing grounds here and suggest that maybe the machlokas between Rav and Shmuel is not about statistics. It's not about the likelihood of this happening or that happening, the barrel made it down or it didn't make it down. But it's more of a conceptual machlokas, a halachic machlokas, about the nature of rov. Because after all, Rav is right. If we're going to take the perspective, if our approach to rov is statistical probability, me'echa tasi that it came from one of the other cities. You find it next to one city, you've got karov. We established already based on Tosus on Daf Kaf Gimel and Beis, this is Kurva de Muchach. Clearly, Kurva de Muchach is a very strong likelihood. Vosef is, Rav is correct. Vosef, we should be Cheshish for Harifa Dinara. Shmuel may have a different opinion about Rov. Shmuel thinks that the Torah gave power and authority to Rov. Again, you have to ask yourself the question, can I construct the Rov or can I not? And Shmuel says that the Rov is based on the group. You have a Dekira, we said it's a machoz of cities. You find something closer to one particular city, but nevertheless within the vicinity of other cities. And Shmuel wants to know one thing. Are the other cities, from the perspective of the barrel and the place that you found it, is there accessibility? Once there's accessibility, then the rov is activated. And once the rov is activated, we don't ask any questions anymore. It's not a statistical probability theory. I'll give you a mashal. The Rashash, I always mention this Rashash. The Rashash says that in the case back in Ksuvis that we discussed about the city, and most of the members of the city are Jewish, and therefore this woman who was raped is allowed to marry Yisrael, allowed to marry Cohen, excuse me. So the Rashash says, and here he's arguing with Reb Kivega, that even if you have 51 Yisraelim in the city, again, the number 51 is not relevant to us, except for the fact that it's one more than 50, but you can multiply it by a million, it doesn't matter. But you have 51 against 50, so there's one extra Jew that tips the scale in favor of the Yisraelim and makes a rov. What happens if that Yisrael comes forward And he tells us, I was not the rapist. I know I wasn't. He may even have witnesses that he was in a different city at that time, like Adam Zoen, Imanu Ayisa. So now what's he looking at? That one Cohen, if he wants to marry this girl and he knows he wasn't the one, what are the statistics that he's looking at in front of him?
Well, that was 50-50 original role.
Says the Rashash, he can marry her. The Rashash is willing to be beside a Kiddushin. Why?
Is he arguing there has to be a role of the
Eno Yehudim? No. He's saying that you had 51 Jews in the city. She's allowed to marry a Cohen. Not only is she allowed to marry a Cohen, that Cohen that she's getting married to can testify on a stack of Bibles, and he brigade them to support his claim, that he wasn't the rapist. So we know that what we're left with from his perspective is 50-50. The robe is gone. How could the Rashash allow him to marry her? The answer is, my friends, that the Rashash understands Rove in a whole different way than the way we do. We understand Rove in terms of statistics. We all took statistics in college, so we think that that's what Rove is all about. Yeah, but statistically, if he knows that he wasn't the Ma'anes, there's no probability whatsoever that he can tip the scale in favor of the fact that she was raped by a Jew. He's looking at 50-50.
What would this case be if there were 60 non-Jews and 40 Jews? Would he say the same thing?
I'm not sure what you're saying. The Mishnah says in that case that no Kohen is allowed to marry her because the Rov is non-Jews. And once a non-Jew rapes a Jewish girl, she can no longer marry a Kohen. That's a tragedy of halacha, but that's the way it works. So I'm not sure, Lawrence, what you're asking at this point.
If this person is ignoring... I'm trying to figure out if he's ignoring the concept of Rov or if he's refining the definition of Rov.
No, what I'm suggesting is that the Rashash, by saying that this Kohen, who really takes himself out of the suffix because he knows he wasn't the Ma'anes, so he's looking at a 50-50. Nevertheless, he can rely on Rov. The Rashash is upgrading Rov to such a powerful entity that it goes way beyond statistical likelihood. Because what he's looking at is 50-50. How can he marry a girl? It's a suffix d'oraisa l'chumra. He doesn't have any Rov to tip the scale. Says the Rashash, he does have a Rov. Because the Rov is constructed a priori by the, you know, by the numbers of Jews in the city, and that's it. Gandik. You know, finito, we close the book, we have a rov, Shalom al Yisrael, she's muteris, and that psak, that she's tahora l'kuhuna, is irreversible. The rov generates that. In other words, the Rashash is looking at rov from a very juridic perspective, you know, like it's a legal agency. Once that agency is activated, there's no return.
Okay, so it wasn't that he required a robe of non-Jews to make her pasul.
Well, no. If there's 50, there's three possibilities. Either there's a robe of Jews and she can marry a Kohen, she's kshera. Or if there's 50-50, she's a safek and therefore the Kohen can't marry her. And if there's robe goyim, then for sure the Kohen can't marry her. And that's a vadai, because then robe sets her up as asura or psula l'kuhuna.
Yeah, but I was trying to figure out if maybe this particular commentator wanted to put the middle case, the 50-50, into the idea of it isn't the third case.
No. The Gemara says explicitly that if it's mechtz al mechtz, if it's 50-50, he cannot. No Kohen is allowed to marry her. The Chiddush of the Rashash is that this case is 51-50 and not 50-50, despite the fact that the Kohen is marrying her, by his own confession, was not the Boel. So when you look at the probability of who was Boel, you're left with a 50-50, and the Rashash says, I'm going to marry her off. And the Rashash goes a step further. He says that if you find a piece of meat in the city, 40, let's say, again, the numbers, you can always multiply them, so that's, I'm just using smaller numbers to make it easier. Let's say 40 pieces of meat in the city are kosher, 20 pieces of meat in the city are non-kosher, but most of the kosher meat is rectangular, it's merubah, that's the way the Jews make the meat, and most of the treifa meat in the city is triangular, and you found a triangular piece of meat. So in other words, if you look at the triangular meats in that city, you'll find that most of them are non-kosher. So from the
triangulars is great.
Says the Rashash, you can eat the triangular meat. Why? Because most of the meat in the city is kosher. He's not interested in triangular or rectangular. Because according to the Rashash, we're not talking about statistics. It's a whole new halacha. The Torah says rov. And rov is determined by meat. In other words, there are two types of meat. There's kosher meat that was shechted, and there's nevela that wasn't shechted. Whether it's triangular or rectangular, depending upon the whim and the will of the various butcher shops, that doesn't have any halachic significance. So you can construct a rov based on your halachic abstract formula of kosher versus non-kosher. Now again, I wouldn't want to eat that meat, I'll be honest with you. I'm a little nervous. But the Rashash would tell me to eat it.
Now, would the Rashash say that even if the meat had a wrapper on it with the name of the non-kosher butcher shop on it, the fact that most of his competitors are kosher, that's okay, that's the rub?
So that comes under a different halacha. And by the way, Lawrence, it's very nice that you mentioned that in your question, because it's an excellent question. It really touches on what Rav is saying here in our Gemara. Rav is saying, according to Rashash, that since a barrel coming down the river is going to get stuck somewhere along the road, that rove doesn't kick in. Meaning, when the rove is a valid rove, and there is some possibility, accessibility, or plausibility that it came from the rove, then you could operate within the Rashash's framework. But supposing let's say I have nine kosher butcher shops, but the problem is that they're all locked. You have a 3-day yontif coming up for Shavuos, right? So you found a piece of meat on Motzei Shavuos before anybody opened up the shop. So you had nine kosher butcher shops, but the only problem is they were all locked. Again, let's assume
the rope of the open butcher shops is the treif one.
Exactly. You have one treif from butcher shop which is open on Chag HaShavuos, because these guys don't care much about Shavuos. It's not relevant to them. They're not selling to a clientele that comes to a retreat in Poughkeepsie, New Jersey. That's where I'm going to be lecturing on Shavuos for a learning retreat. They're not interested in that. So they're open on Shavuos. You found a piece of meat. And clearly, you know, the meat is not a week old, it's a day old, maybe 2 days old, maybe 3 days old. So Shmuel is going to say, well, wait a minute, maybe it's 4 days old. The chances that it didn't spoil, you know, for 4 days, it's been sitting in the sun, I don't know what. Shmuel is going to try to find a possibility of activating the rove based on some way out accessibility or plausibility that maybe it came from the rove. Rav is going to say no. But in your case, Lawrence, where the meat it has a seal on it that says it's non-kosher, the Torah relies on seals. I don't mean seals from the ocean, right? And there's no suffix over here, so the rove can't tell you a thing. But says the Rashash, since you have a certain number of triangular pieces of meat, or I forgot which way we went, whatever the model was, that are kosher, so that allows you to introduce the rove, very much reflecting the sheet of Shmuel over here. So Rabosai, just to summarize what I'm saying is, the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, it could have tremendous repercussions all over Shas. How do we operate with a rove? And the issue revolves not about how the rove works, the mechanics of rove, but how to construct a rove. Meaning, when does the Torah give me license, a green light, to go ahead and construct a rove? Do I need a rove in order to construct a rove? It's almost as if Rav is saying, I need some sort of statistical probability in order to get into the rove, to give it some gushpanka, some status. However, Shmuel says no, as long as there's some plausibility, as weak as it is, I can come up with some construct that it came from the rove is operative. That's only a machlokas as far as whether you can construct a rove. Once you've already constructed a rove, then the Rashash says, rove is supreme. Rove reigns like a king. And we don't go into details and start doing detective work and research to, you know, like Sherlock Holmes to try to figure out whether in this particular case we could figure out, okay, you know, in every case you could do what's called forensic medicine, and maybe you could determine the difference between one piece of meat that comes from a kosher butcher store and another piece of meat that comes this. You know, you can research it, maybe find that the Jews use more, you know, more red ink when they write on top of the meat or something. Who knows what? And it's ad infinitum. You know, there's no limit to how much research. Let's say in the model, getting back to the Mishnah in Ksuvis, of a girl who was raped. Who knows? Maybe if you want to do research, you could get every single person in the city and clarify whether he was in the city at the time, he wasn't, and then you start juggling the rove and the mead and switching it around this way and that way. You know, Eilid Dover Sof, there's no end to it. So the Rashash says at one point, Halacha says, if you can construct the rove, if it's plausible, using Shmuel's logic, then the rove takes it from there. After that, I'm not interested in you do know, you don't know, you research, you have proof, all that goes by the wayside. Rabosai, how much time do we have left? Well, we have to end. Because the truth is, I was hoping to do the Gemara about Ahu Chatzma, but next week is Shavuos already, correct? No. So the week after Shavuos. Oh, so we can do this next Monday? Next Wednesday?
Yeah.
Alright, so I just want to wish everyone... What do you say?
Shavuot is Motzei Shabbat. It's Sunday, Monday.
Correct, but this Monday, I'm sorry, this Wednesday, we can get together. So Bli Neder, remind me, I want to do this. It's very interesting sugi here of Chatzva, and that touches a little bit on a lot of what, on many of the issues that we've discussed. So the goal for next Wednesday would be to try to finish to the next Mishnah. Maybe even we could do... make aschola on the famous Mishnah here of Chav Dalet Amid Beis. I'm sorry, Chav Hei Amid Beis of the Ilan and the Bar, which is the machlokes that we've discussed many times about, between Rabbi Yossi and the Chacham about Giri Dilei and Harchak Ben Azikin. If not, maybe I'll choose a different Mishnah that we do, you know, depending on how much time and what we accomplish next Wednesday. Is it fair to assume then next Wednesday, it's the same time?
I didn't check when Mincha is next. We can find the 10 minutes later next Wednesday.
Okay, so if you don't mind sending me a reminder.
10?
Wait.
Does 7:10 work for anybody? It doesn't work for me, but it's open. 7:10, Algie? You think it works?